You are listening to a sermon by Henry Neufeld, recorded on Sunday, June 16th, 2019, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Is Travis here today? I don't see him. People tell me that sometimes when I speak, my voice trails off and they can't hear me. A few weeks ago at lunch, Travis said, well, there's a way to fix that. He said, when you're practicing your speech, put an eraser in your mouth. And you will talk louder and you will talk louder when you take it out. Well, I tried that. And what Travis didn't tell me is that when you put something in your mouth, you activate saliva. So I drooled all over everything. So I have a question for you. There's an island off the coast of BC. It's called Piers Island. Piers. P-I-E-R-S. Who knows where that is? Anybody? Well, if you've taken the ferry from Tawassan to Swartz Bay, just as you arrive at Swartz Bay, there are two, pardon me, two islands on either side. One of them is Piers Island. It's about 1 square mile, and it has about 131 homes along the outer perimeter of the island. In the 1930s, the Sons of Freedom Doukhobors were strongly opposed to government involvement of any sort. They opposed compulsory education, family allowance, land ownership, marriage registration, and you could go on. A sect of the larger Doukhobor community, the Sons of Freedom, lived in the Kootenay region of BC and attracted a lot of attention. As pacifists, they objected to government, any government, because they saw that an infringement on their life. The Sons of Freedom believed that any government involvement would lead to militarization. And as pacifists, they refused interaction with the government. They protested. Their protests included destroying government buildings like post offices, hydro poles by bombing or arson. They also burned their own homes because they didn't believe in private ownership of homes. All land belongs to God. You don't own property. You don't own land. And yet the government wanted them to register and they refused. They also used nudity as a protest, and that was quite common in the early years. I was going to title my sermon Nudity, Tolstoy, and a few other things, and I thought that would have generated some interesting comments, but I decided not to. Well, in 1932, nudity was an offense, criminal act in BC. Hundreds of Doukhobors, of Sons of Freedom Doukhobors, were arrested. And the government didn't have room in the penitentiaries for so many people, so they decided to establish a separate colony, a separate place for these protesters. And Piers Island was their choice. Now, Piers Island was owned by one family, and the provincial government expropriated it and established accommodation for 546 Freedom, Sons of Freedom men and women. Now, some of these families had children. The Children's Aid Society of Vancouver placed 119 children in foster homes. Additionally, 75 children were placed in an orphan's home in Victoria. An interesting feature of that was that no parental rights were removed. And that caused some problems if a child became ill and needed legal consent from the parent, but they managed all of that. At one time, during the 2 years on Piers Island, several Dukabor ladies decided to protest something, I don't remember what. So they disrobed and appeared in the dining hall naked. Well, prison authorities tried to decide, what do we do about this? They're already in prison, right? So sometimes bureaucrats can make wise decisions, and they decided to do nothing. Ignore them. And it worked. And after a few days, they got dressed, and everything was fine. Maybe it was the cold, I don't know. My experience with Dukabors goes back to 1960s when I spent one summer when I was at university working as a prison guard at the old Ocala prison farm in Burnaby. It's gone now and there's residential housing there. On my tier of, I worked the afternoon shift from 4 to midnight, my tier of 22 inmates, I had two Sons of Freedom Dukabors. They were part of a group of four who were on their way to the Trail post office with a bomb to blow it up. Now, they never wanted to hurt people, so they would blow up a building at the post office at night when presumably nobody was there. Or they would take hydro lines where there were no people around, because they didn't want to hurt people. So these four boys were on their way to Trail. They were stopped by a police roadblock, which was not uncommon in those days, or even in the 50s and 60s. And they were cleared, they drove on, the bomb went off prematurely. One young man was killed, and one was sentenced to a youth jail in Haney, where Sven Eriksson worked, and two others were on my tier. So in jail, we had a lot of time. So I got to know Peter and Bill quite well. We had some interesting discussions. Now, the Dukabors emerged in Russia around 1720. And Dukabor settlements existed in the Molochna area near where the Mennonites were. But as far as I could determine, there was minimal contact between the Dukabors and the Mennonites. Around 1840, the Russian government forcibly relocated the Dukabors to the Caucasus area. And gradually, persecution of the Dukabors increased. Enough about the Dukabors for now. We'll get back to them in a few minutes. It was almost 2 years ago that Paul Martins spoke in this chapel. Paul and Candace attended here a number of years ago. They were former residence coordinators in this building. Paul now teaches at Baylor University in Texas. Paul spoke about the Anabaptist vision of the 1500s, which he said served us well in the past. But we no longer live in that time, he said. And the issues the Anabaptists faced are not issues we face today. They were dealing with state and government control of the churches and issues like that, which are not our issues. The issues we face, Paul said, include consumerism, racism, individualism, the misuse of power, loneliness, and so on. Now, Paul said, we are deeply, maybe too deeply, integrated into society. We are in the world, he said, and we need to figure out how to live with integrity today. Just as an aside, I had a copy of Paul's talk here, so my memory isn't that good. Now, Richard Rohr, on a similar theme, says Christianity largely mirrors its culture instead of transforming it. he points out that Christians are not exceptional in their behavior. And he says, we have been seduced. Now, Paul Martin's comments made me curious. How then shall we live? That was a question Tolstoy raised. He raised that in a book he wrote in 1866. How then shall we live? It was echoed by Francis Schaeffer in 1976 and by John Friesen here a few years ago. And the question is as important today as it was in the past. Anabaptism is supposed to be more than a bunch of ideas. It's supposed to be a way of life. It's supposed to mean the salt, being the salt and light. We should have something to offer our society. Well, what is it we have to offer? What is it that we have that our culture might want? Why would anyone want to walk into our church? And we know a lot of people are walking out of the churches these days. Well, maybe we need a prophet to help us out. Maybe we need to do what Carl Brown suggests, engage in senseless acts of kindness. If you look at his email address, you'll see those words. Maybe we need to pay less attention to correct doctrine and focus more on transformational behavior, like Tolstoy did. Tolstoy. He was born into a wealthy Russian family, and his estate consisted of 4,000 acres and had about 1,000 serfs or servants. Now, in the 1800s, that's a large estate. He traveled and studied the situation in Russia, and he noticed a few things. One is that the peasants were often quite happy, despite their poverty. And he found that their faith was a key guiding factor for them. Now, this led him to start reading his Bible. And he began writing about poverty, greed, and exploitation. He predicted that unless Russia acted, there would be a workers' revolution with horrors of destruction and murder. And he was right about that. Bloodshed and revolution came with the 1917 revolution. So he wrote a lot. He wrote about money, about ethics, and about materialism. He acknowledged that poverty will never be eliminated. He tried to imagine an ideal world, and from the Sermon on the Mount, he extracted five principles, not unlike Jesus' Sermon on the Plain that we have read from the Gospel of Luke. Tolstoy's five principles were, do not be angry, do not lust or covet, do not bind yourself by oaths, resist not him who is evil, be good to the just and the unjust. But Tolstoy liked the Doukhobor style of faith and their communal life. He considered them the best farmers in Russia. I don't know how much he knew about Mennonites. And he was impressed by their pacifism. And as early as 1819, they were granted exemption from military service in Russia. In 1895, the Doukhobors burned all their weapons. And the same year, their exemption from military service was withdrawn, and persecution by the government intensified. Tolstoy, being a writer, gave the Doukhobors a lot of international publicity. British Quakers learned of the Doukhobor plight and helped them plan their immigration from Russia. Now, interestingly enough, these Quakers had a history with the Doukhobors. In 1819, two Quaker missionaries, a British and an American, visited Russia. They spent some time in the Mennonite village of Altona and also with the Doukhobors. And the Quakers visited because they heard of the Doukhobors' persecution by the Russian authorities. The Doukhobors decided they wanted to leave Russia, and two destinations emerged, Cyprus and Canada. Surprisingly to us, Cyprus was their choice. Now, Cyprus wanted 15 British pounds per person. And the Duke of Burgh decided they wanted to pursue that option. In a matter of days, the British Quakers raised the needed money, and over 1,200 Duke of Burghs sailed for Cyprus in August 1898. Tolstoy helped them with $17,000 in cash. We might call this support by the Quakers and Tolstoy senseless acts of kindness. It's an amazing feat for the Quakers to come up with that much money in a few days, and a substantial donation by Tolstoy. Cyprus was not a good choice. The seaside climate and the strange culture did not suit them. They suffered a lot of illness. 108 of their group died, and the Duke of Burgh was asked to be allowed to leave Cyprus and go to Canada. The Canadian government gave them 600 acres in Saskatchewan, not far from Yorkton. And in 2 years, the Cyprus Duke of Burghs traveled to Canada. Now this is where transformational behavior gets interesting. The British Quakers and Tolstoy had already helped to move to Cyprus. They could have said, "We helped you go to Cyprus. You wanted to go there. Now make the best of it." But they didn't do that. The British Quakers chartered two ships to take the Cyprus Duke of Burghs, plus more from Russia, to Canada. In total, 7,363 Duke of Burghs came to Canada in 1898-99. Each ship made two trips to Canada carrying the Duke of Burghs. One of Tolstoy's sons accompanied the Duke of Burghs on their 23-day ship journey to Canada. They survived the first prairie winter largely due to support from the Quakers in the U.S. and Canada. Transformational behavior, senseless acts of kindness. In Verigan, Saskatchewan, 50 miles northeast of Yorkton, a Duke of Burgh museum tells their story. It has a lot of exhibits about Tolstoy and early Duke of Burgh life in Canada. It's well worth a visit. I want to talk about Tolstoy and the Quakers because they are strong examples of what Christian transformational behavior can accomplish, individually and collectively. An individual like Tolstoy used his wealth to help others. Quakers in Britain, the US, and Canada worked as groups to transform and rescue the Duke of Burghs. A little over a year ago, Dr. Nazir Zaidi, a Muslim, said the behavior of Muslims, Christians, and Jews should be significantly different than that of others. It's been observed that the majority of Christians are not highly transformed. We tend to reflect our culture rather than operate as a yeast within it. We're not exceptional in our behavior. Transformational behavior is needed. We need more acts, more senseless acts of kindness. Our world needs hope. Fear of crime, immigrants, minorities is alive and well. And we need to demonstrate that love can overcome fear. Well, the Christian church, lest I'm making you feel guilty, the Christian church has always been involved in helping a lot of society. Establishing hospitals, schools, care homes for the elderly, orphanages, refugee resettlement. These are important contributions. And the work of MCC, Mennonite Disaster Service, Food Grains Bank, food banks, daycare centers have made significant contributions to our society. These are all very valuable contributions. Well, Paul Martin said we should share our Anabaptist heritage, which we have nurtured and cultivated, with the hope an expectation that even in these days, God's Spirit will work. Transform the culture. That's the challenge. Well, I've told these stories of transformational behavior, or we could call them senseless acts of kindness, by Tolstoy and the other group. Let's remember Tolstoy echoing Jesus' words in the Beatitudes. Do not be angry. Do not lust or covet. Do not bind yourself by oaths. Resist not him who is evil. Be good to the just and unjust. And we might add Carl's advice, do some senseless acts of kindness. Become transformational individuals. Like the early world is described in the book of Acts, they're accused of turning the world upside down.